This morning, HPR's Noe Tanigawa joins us to talk about disinformation, but she is taking the global view. Good morning, Noe.
Hey, good morning, Catherine. This was so interesting. You know, it's part of an East-West Center program. It's their seminars live series, and they offered one recently called A Global Contagion of Infodemics and Conspiracy Theories. And it featured international experts on those topics. Conspiracy theories are nothing new, but these experts noted that as the COVID pandemic spread, an infodemic of disinformation and conspiracy theories found new audiences. And I think you'll be surprised by the global businesses that they say are fueling the spread. Stephen Lewandowski's professor and chair of cognitive psychology at the University of Bristol there in the UK, he co-authored the Conspiracy Theory Handbook, came out last year. He says, when people lose control of aspects of their lives, some people are vulnerable to believing conspiracy theories. And Lewandowski says, this is important during COVID because studies show people who believe conspiracy theories are less likely to follow health guidelines or get vaccinated. Endorsement of conspiracy theories has been linked to violence. In Britain, they've had attacks on 5G installations because of a conspiracy theory that linked 5G broadband to COVID. Have you heard that?
Yes, I remember those stories, and I was thinking, this is like just what we need, something else, you know.
But comes out of left field for most people. Lewandowski says more than 20 experts on disinformation agree that there's a nuanced phenomenon taking place here.
Psychologically and cognitively, misinformation sticks in memory even when it is corrected. That is what makes the situation so difficult. Because what is happening is that when we walk through the world and we're encountering information, we're continuously building a mental model of the world. And if somebody tells us all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, something that you believe to be true is actually a myth, it's extremely difficult for us to update our mental model. So we're in a situation where people can often tell us that a myth is false because they have understood and believed the correction, but they act as if they still rely on the misinformation because people prefer a complete mental model that's incorrect to one in which there is a core component missing.
Lewandowski says the most important solution is to inoculate people against disinformation ahead of time. Tell people how they're going to be misled, even though you may not know the exact content. Lewandowski says there actually is evidence that preparing people against disinformation ahead of time actually does work. There is, however, another complicating factor. According to Tom Rosensteel, executive director, American Press Institute there in Arlington, Virginia.
Another dynamic which we've learned from research is that you can make people believe things that they know are not true by repetition. There's a study from the University of Indiana that shows that you can make people believe that Scottish men wear saris, not kilts, if you repeat that often enough. Then you also have the press trying to fight the rise in disinformation and conspiracy theories by telling people you're wrong, which actually digs in their worldview that they're being talked down to by a media that is hectoring and lecturing them.
Yeah, we saw that repetition with the president and his tweets. Some of that stuff stuck.
And it's sticking is the thing. You know, that's what gets people concerned here. The fact that people believe what they want to believe, and they're finding out there are ways to make people want certain things. And exactly what you're saying, it's repetition. Now, this is so interesting. Also featured in that East-West Center webinar, Anna Sophie Harling, Managing Director Europe and Executive Vice President for NewsGuard in London. She explained how algorithms and the suggestions they provide can construct an entire online ecosystem.
Individuals live in realities that are shaped by their online information ecosystems, which are constructed by algorithms, which seek to maximize financial returns for tech platforms. As mentioned before, the pandemic has also exacerbated financial inequalities. And when you compound this with increased political polarization, users can definitely exist in an online world in which COVID is a hoax, vaccines kill, and Trump is our only solution to a dangerous new world order led by Bill Gates. These are definitely the same people who are shopping at the same grocery stores as us.
Anna-Sophie Harling there with NewsGuard London. This phenomenon is global. It's global as well as here in Hawaii. And Southeast Asia is leading the world in a lot of types of social media usage. At first, it was Twitter. Jakarta was once the capital city of Twitter, and usage per day is still really high in the Philippines, Myanmar, Indonesia, and Malaysia. Now, Ross Tapsell is director of Australian National University's Malaysia Institute in Canberra. And he says the high usage is because that market over there was flooded with cheap blackberries from China. He says Southeast Asia's really been innovative, creating businesses around social media and disinformation. And in some ways, he says the West is behind.
Southeast Asians are fantastically innovative at using social media amongst urban middle-class youth who are entrepreneurs. Also innovation from the political classes and from PR firms who are experts at creating networks of disinformation. And the classic story would be to remind everyone that Rodrigo Duterte in the Philippines was elected around this highly impressive and in some ways innovative way of using disinformation around drugs and crime. My research has been spending time in this industry, interviewing people who work as either trolls in the Philippines, cyber troopers in Malaysia, or buzzers, as they're called locally in Indonesia. So it's this new labor force, which has been prominent in the call center industry and in the digital labor industry for some time. This professionalization of the disinformation industry is an emerging form of labor. And that's what's driving much of this in the region.
That was Ross Tapsell. He's the director of Australian National University's Malaysia Institute. And he says hyperpartisan news is part of what they're creating and disseminating there. They do a lot of things to pretend that they're bona fide news sites. And he says that identity politics has become a driver for this disinformation industry.
Yeah, you know, you just reflect back and you think about how the seeds of distrust were sown way back when. And then, you know, leading up to what we saw January 6th on our nation's capital. Yeah, you can see this. So, you know, you always think it's happening somewhere else. And then when it's on our front door, it's startling.
Oh, so much so, Catherine.
It's fascinating. Fascinating look at the times that we live. But thank you so much, Noe.
Thank you. Thank you, Catherine. Happy Aloha Friday.
Happy Aloha Friday. You've been hearing from Noe Tanigawa. For links to the webinar, head to our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.